Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health, awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MAN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today. She's all the way from US of A. And let's give a warm welcome. Can you introduce yourself?
Well, hello. It is good morning over here. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. My name is Savannah Spratt. I am the creator and host of the Hood Talks podcast. I am a Ferguson, Missouri resident in the United States of America. I am a mother of two beautiful baby girls, and I consider myself a community advocate. And that's kind of the work I do.
Wow. Community advocate, and you're in America. We've heard a lot about America in the last, well, forever, to be honest, but definitely.
We always heard about America.
It's taken a different turn, because it's always been there, hasn't it? But it's been, now people know about it even more now, particularly after what happened, the events of the past year and things like that. So you've got a podcast. Let's talk about you spoke about the weather and what's it like there, and can you tell the listeners where is Ferguson in relation to the map of America?
So Ferguson it's crazy because it's inside of St. Louis, which is in Missouri. So we have these municipalities that breaks up everything, and it's crazy and weird. Yeah. But it's St. Louis is in Missouri. Missouri is in the Midwest. And I mean, if you heard about Ferguson, you think of the situation with Mike Brown. Yeah. Unfortunately, rest in peace. But I mean, other than that, Ferguson is a regular neighborhood
What's it like to live there? Is it quite? Because I always speak of rural and village or city.
No, Ferguson is not. It's city kind of life. It's kind of mixed. But it's city. It's mostly city. St. Louis is city. It's a big city in Missouri. Majority African American, in a sense. But there is areas in Midwest that is rural, but St. Louis is city.
It's a city. So St. Louis, I know there's St. Louis Cardinals. Is that the way? St. Louis Cardinals. That's the...
Yes. No,
yeah.
Weber. Mm-hmm. Cardinals. Yep.
And do you have... is that... No, that's not where they go and play. St. Louis. Is that where they... Not, that's not where they do the jazz festival. Music and... Is it kind of famous for... What's St. Louis famous for?
So we have the Arch here. Some of our celebrities. I think Jennifer Lewis is one. Then you have the... Kenlock was like the a major black city in St. Louis. What else? I know the St. Louis Arch. Other than that,
So it's a city.
The Cardinals. We lost the Rams. We ain't got the football team no more. We lost the Rams to Los Angeles. So it's just the Cardinals.
Because I know St. Louis is a pretty famous place. I mean, seeing obviously Ferguson. So,
yeah, there's a lot of different. I forgot the guy's name from All of Us. Is that that's the name of the show? It's a black guy. He's from St. Louis.
Yeah.
We have some celebrities that's from St. Louis, but
Is that where you grew up then?
Born and raised in St. Louis.
Okay.
Been here all my life. Never stayed out of state.
So is it a place that you enjoy living? Is it because you've never had the chance to go, or is it just the fact that you don't want to go because it's quite home, and or do you like it? You know, what is it about the place?
I love it. It's home. But I would like to go other places and stay other places. I've visited a lot of different places. But you know, the love for it to want your city to thrive, I think that's what kind of plants me here and keeps me here.
Because
you know, it's so easy to leave and go somewhere else instead of being impactful and changing what's already, you know, you're already what you know. So being home and making changes that can be beneficial for not just you, but your community. So I think that kind of what keeps me here. But I've been tempted, like New Orleans. Yeah. I've been there several times. I love it. I've been to Texas. Texas is a nice place to stay in the United States. California, I haven't been there, but I would love to go stay in Cali. But yeah, St. Louis is home and my heart is here, and you know, I just want to see my city thrive. I know it can.
So I didn't realize, I mean, I was growing up, I knew America was quite big, but I didn't realize how big it was till I went there. I went and worked in New York. I've spoken on the podcast about this before. I can see why you, in a sense, even though I'm asking you that question, I can see why you wouldn't. It's hard for you to kind of get out to a place, because America has this place where it's kind of seasonal in different places. It's seasonal. You have good weather, you got bad weather in certain places. And it's so big. Why, you know, in a sense, why would you want to go to a different country? Why would you want? Do you know what I mean? Why would you want? Yeah, you said you've been to,
right? Like, you have so many different places in one place.
Yes.
That you can, you know, go and do and visit and be different than your own.
Yes.
So like, why venture off to different countries?
That's what I said. It's almost like a country. You have the country, but you have all these big places in between. And you know, when I went there, and I saw all the, you know, the, you know, when you see the TV programs where they throw the newspaper on the lawn, and the lawn's like, do you not mean the house is that far away? Do you know, little things like that. And then, but also the places where they've got, and look, a lot of the houses are made out of wood, which is a bit of a shock to me. But they said that it's things to do with weather and stuff like that. So it, you know, a lot of the things that you see on, say, like on British TV or around the world, it's actually true of America. You actually see those things when you go there. So. So for you, it's true, isn't it? Yeah, but so for you, as you're growing up, you've got two kids. What are your two kids' names? What are, you know, are they young? What are they like? And what's it like to be a?
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old and I have a 2-year-old. Oh, look, I have a 3-year-old and I have a almost 10-month-old. and they're both girls, Devaya and Delilah. That's their names. You know, I'm working hard to just make sure that they don't have the type of experience I had growing up. Because, like, I hear what you're saying. Like, you see those picket fences and the nice yards and the family homes on TV. And some of that is here in the United States. You know, some people got that. But when I think back to my childhood, that was on TV, just like, you know, you sitting there and was watching it. It wasn't my reality. I didn't have that. You know, I had a mom. Her and my father, of course, did not work out. He was addicted to drugs. He wasn't around. He was around. I knew him, and he came in and out, kind of, sort of. My mom was always there. But I think she, in the Black community, in over here in the United States of America, mental health is a big stigma, and we don't believe. We're working towards trying to change that narrative. I am, but I don't think we take it as serious as we should, because we are dealing with a lot of trauma over here in the Black community in the United States of America. We're dealing with trauma, you know, it's real. And if we don't get our people healing from what we've been through, and what we're still going through, still to this day, we need to, it's not beneficial. So I think my mom, you know, is a product of her situation. And so I don't think she really addressed her mental health issues. And so it kind of triggered down to, you know, her being the best mom that she could in her sense. But, you know, I still think if she would have addressed her mental health, she probably would have been a great mom. But in her own circumstances, in her own situations that she went through, you know, so. But you know, eventually she did find another mate. They eventually married or whatever. He's unfortunately he passed away, but you know, he wasn't my favorite either. But you're a child, you can't make those choices for your parents, right? But again, like I said, now as a mom myself, I'm definitely trying to do things that can help impact and make my children have a better situation than I did. I'm really addressing my mental health too, my own mental health. I see a therapist at least once a week. I try to at least do it weekly. And, you know, just trying to give myself grace and just, I call it trying to break generational curses. Those things that we're told, we're taught, like, you know, being a superwoman, trying to do it all. Those generational curses, like unhealthy foods and, you know, not addressing your mental health. Like, you all right, just pray it on, you know, those stereotype things. But, I mean, like you were saying, I see that on TV too, and yeah, that wasn't my reality.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because when I mentioned the thing about the TV and every, when I spoke about that, it was, also, I saw the other side. I saw the neighborhoods, and when I, again, you know, when I've been walking through New York and going through, and you see some, you know, like they call them the projects and all this sort of stuff, and you think, gosh, you know, this is a reality. You know what I mean? You hear it on the rap music, and you know, and you see the images, you know, on TV growing up and stuff like that. And this, you go, gosh, this is the reality. This is where people live, and this is how people live. And when you hear the stories over the years of particularly the way Black people have been treated in the USA, it's quite shocking. Even till now, you know, till the events of the last year. Before we talk about your thingy, because I know there's a few things there that you've mentioned, and you know, all power to you for having, you know, to be able to bring into this world of ours two beautiful girls. So,
thank you.
Let's talk about the last. How have you found the last year with this the pandemic? It's a big thing in America, massive thing. This voting thing, and you know, people's opinions and your opinion, and then three, the George Floyd thing, amongst those other things. But let's talk about those things in the last year. How have you dealt with the last year?
And honestly, it's been rough. It's definitely been rough. Because even in the pandemic, you know, you feel so isolated. Especially, like, I was pregnant throughout the pandemic. So, you know, nervous about my pregnancy, nervous about the delivery part of it. Just alone, because you can't really, you know, tap into the connections or other people because you're social distancing. You're supposed to be away from people. So feeling alone, moms groups definitely help me. So support groups, you know, talking to other people or other moms, that helped me throughout the pregnancy part. Really relying on my doulas. A doula is non-medicated birth support person. For those who don't know what a doula is, really depending on them throughout the pregnancy. So that helped me there. A therapist, that helped me. As far as the...
Was you at that time... How far, what did you say, 10 months? So, you say, how old is your child?
So, she'll be one on the 22nd of June. Almost 10 months.
Yeah, so she's basically, you were going through the last part, as we started this, you was actually going through pregnancy and then gave birth during... That's a story. Yep. That's a story in itself. So, when it kind of... kick-started this whole thing, how did you feel? Was you panicking? How did you feel?
Yes, I was panicking because at the beginning, when, like, I was pregnant, and, you know, when it was getting close to my delivery date, they were talking about, that's when stuff was shutting down. So they were saying, like, you know, it might be possible that you can't have your significant other in the room, right, or you can't have, you know, my doula. Like, I wanted my doula there. Yeah. Like, I had a traumatic birth with my birthing experience with my first daughter, which, again, that's one of the things that's in the United States right now is the high mortality rate for Black women. Black women are three times more likely to die in childbirth than white women in the United States of America, and which is crazy. But that's one of my things that I advocate for, and I'm a big advocate for. But yeah, so I was like, no, wait, I can't. I already don't really want to birth in the hospital. I've already had a traumatic experience. And then now you're telling me that I can't have my support people there? Like, oh no, this is not good. So my stress levels were high, but I had to like calm myself and again rely on people like my doulas to be there and support me through the process, because I didn't want to be stressed and stress out my baby and then not impact her from me being stressed. Yeah. But it did work out. My doula was virtually, so I was able to have her still virtually, which was still beneficial. And then they opened it up to where they allow support people. So my significant other and my sister were able to be in the delivery room with me.
Right. Did you say virtually?
Yes, virtually, like where we are right now. Yep, that's how my doula supported me. Yep. I know, it's crazy though. Let me plug one thing. If you guys are hearing this podcast and you're hearing me talk about this, I do have an episode about my birthing experience on my podcast. But yes, she did do it virtually, like through the phone, over the laptop. Like, yeah. Yeah. She was there coaching through, like we are talking right now. And it was still as beneficial as her being there in person. So, yeah, shout out to doulas. They are very needed, highly needed in the United States of America. Yes. Shout out to them.
Right. I'm as I say in England, gobsmacked. I'm shocked. I'm just stunned because if anyone could have seen me just then, my mouth was wide open. I was like, what? And so obviously it would have had to be then, like you say, distancing, and then so. In a sense, did you have, while you're giving birth, you had a laptop on, or what?
Yes. I had a laptop. I had two phones. Look, I was making sure there was nothing that was going to go dead and we couldn't have her there. No, yes. Laptop. They had a tablet at the hospital. I had two phones. Yeah, I'm like, no, we're going to have all this electronics to make sure that we have a connection to my doula.
That is really amazing. Yeah. Gosh, so you can, that's something that you could actually tell, you know, even if you've done it on the podcast, but something that's brilliant, because that's something that you could be told to your children. You were born with me.
Yes, I was born in a pandemic. And I had a doula over the phone supporting me. Yes. And it was all, and I did it naturally in the hospital, no medicine or nothing. So shout out to again the doula and the support. Yes.
So even though you were panicking, did you find that the second birth was a lot easier?
The second birth was a lot easier, and I say that because, and again, ladies, if you're listening, Black women especially in the United States of America, get educated, get you some support. If you can birth outside of a hospital, midwives are the dopest thing right now. Hop on that home birth or hop on the birthing centers, get you a midwife. But if you have to birth in the hospital like I have to, because you have high-risk pregnancies, there are doulas.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I know you're nodding your head there, and there's a lot of suspicion surrounding Black women and giving birth and the mortality rate and...
Yes,
there's, and it's been done in hospitals, and they may take the fetus for experimental
purposes. It's a lot, and then it comes down to just systematic racism. you know, black women don't feel pain and, you know, all that, unnecessary things that, you know, they want to, you know, experiment on black people. And, yeah, it's a lot of, some of the things are just systematic racism. Yeah. Especially when we're talking about these women that are dying. They are dying from things that could have been prevented, preventable things. Yeah. So, it's just because they're not listening either. So, it comes down to a lot of that.
So, basically, there's a message out there for, you know, for women, for black women, to like you say, make sure someone's there. Get a doula. If you can, do it naturally, not in a hospital.
Yeah.
Again, raise the suspicion.
Mm-hmm. And even if you do it in the hospital, you don't have to do medication. You don't have to have medication to burn.
Yeah, the medication.
Yeah.
Block.
So let's unless it's necessary, but get you a doula. They'll help you through all of that.
So let's talk about the presidency. And I mean, obviously you'd have been going through things with the pandemic and stuff like that and worry with your child. Was the presidency as
just as stressful? It was. It probably was more stressful. The previous 4 years with the previous presidents was a headache itself. Waking up every day, like you being outside the United States of America and you're seeing like the headlights, I mean the storylines and all of those things, ain't got nothing on every day waking up seeing your president on the TV news for some ridiculousness. Like, it was just like draining. Like, there was never anything positive coming out of the White House. Everything was up and down. We didn't really know like what was really going on. You didn't know what to believe. It was craziness. And you're looking at your president in your country like, do I really live here? Is this really real? Like, I feel like it was a straight TV show.
That
whole 4 years was a TV show to me. I'm like, this is not real. Is this realistic? Like, really? But then you go into your city and your areas and your towns and your home places, and you like, yeah, it's real.
Because
you see the hatred. You see, when we talk about systems that's put in place to hold people back, you see that, you experience that. So you get to understanding, like, yeah, it is real life. It's real.
Yeah. It's almost like...
And so it's draining. And so then you have to figure out how to maintain without going... Because one thing I can say, being black in America and understanding what you're dealing with in this systematic racism, you're going to be angry. Yeah. You're going to wake up angry because you see and you realize the truth every day. So you have to find some sense of peace in something, even if it's just as simple as your own home. Yeah. So having that,
because when we're living outside of it, and I mean I don't really watch the news, but if things come up, I never watch the news, but if something might come up on, I don't know. Like last year, you know, things were coming up on Twitter, and I had to turn Twitter off. I had to delete it, and it was like a constant thing every day. And then you have things like the president having a Twitter account and all these sort of things, and we don't seem to realise the extent, because I know that millions are spent on campaigns. Now, it blew my head in, because I thought, wait a minute, they spend millions just on a campaign to get this person into a position of, to vote for a position, for, to vote to get into that position. You're thinking, where would that money be? Wouldn't that money be better spent on communities and projects? You know, and what I mean by project, I mean
when
projects.
When you got homeless people, when you got people that are in need of food.
Yes.
You got lack of resources in communities that can, you know, help the community thrive, but you got millions of dollars to waste on putting somebody in a power position to benefit you.
Yeah, it's for me it was it's a bit baffling because you don't hear about, it's only been the last maybe, I don't know how many years, where you find out how much is spent on the campaign and stuff like that. So in America, kind of politics is taken quite seriously because of the things that happen within the community, say a black community. You almost have to be part of politics, don't you? Because you have to try and find out, is this person lying? When they're gonna, are they gonna make changes for what we've been going through all these years? And I don't think we, looking on this side, quite understand what you guys go through. What are some of the things that you go through in living in America? Just a couple of things.
In terms of racism, you know,
and things like that, as a woman, what are some of the things that policies that have been put in place that restricted you?
That restricted? I just think it's not. So I think it's not investing in our communities, urban communities. Yeah. So it's like this. How can I put it? Because people be like, well, you have the same things I have. So for instance, say I might have a snook in my area compared to a more what do they want to call it? I don't want to just say, I forgot what they would call it, but say another community where it's more upper class,
like affluent
community. Yeah. So say in my community, we both have a Snooks, but when you go to a grocery store, you go to their grocery store. Their grocery store has fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. You know, it has little cafe areas, things that they can, you know, nice, fresh, and great foods.
Yeah, yeah.
You go to my grocery stores, you know, you picking over slim of nothing from fresh fruits and vegetables. Like, none of it looks fresh at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't look. And then they're charging you so much, it's not affordable, really. So, first of all, I barely can pay for it. And secondly, if I do pay for it, it ain't good. It ain't gonna last.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good for me. So, why should I be buying it? So, why not go buy the package, you know, meats stuff that's bad for me, because I know it's gonna last longer. So, those are the type of situations that, you know, it ain't a law that specifically says, oh, your neighborhood's gonna have that food.
But you can see, you can feel it and see it.
Yes, you can feel it and see it. Yes, yes, yes. And to me, St. Louis is a very segregated city. So those things are, like, if you come down here right now, if I take you on a tour, you will be able to see and witness what I'm talking about. Like, it's just...
So St. Louis has a... So you say it's a segregated... We can go back over just a quick thingy, but when we spoke about St. Louis before, so it's segregated, and that's been obviously something that's been dated back from years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty segregated. I mean, you have your moments in your areas where people are like sprinkled in, but for the most part, it's pretty segregated.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that segregation feel for you, and in terms of your mental health? And you know, if you looked at, say, if you ignore the part where it says, oh, it's not ignore the part, but you say in this instance, if you think, okay, racism aside, how does it feel to be not? Is it segregated in terms of if I go over to that side, I will feel. If I go over to
Fearful.
If I step over that
yes.
line, I will feel like an alien.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have, yes. For perfectly good example, not too long ago, my oldest, she had a birthday. We took her to this place, and, you know, it's in a black neighborhood, but it's predominantly white people utilize this space. But it's like a space for everybody. Everybody's supposed to be able to enjoy it. And we went and feel like we got singled out for being a black family and had a horrible experience there. And, you know, it hurt my heart, because not only that, you know, my baby was like literally excited about being in this space, and she had like a whole tantrum because we were being made to leave. Like, they were basically forcing us out to leave. And so in those type of, it hurts. It hurts. It's irritating. And then so you kind of get angry. And then they like to tag that black angry woman, you know, tag on you when you want to speak up and when you want to be voiceful about what's going on. So how I deal with it, I think I deal with it by what I do in the community and how I voice on the Hood Talks podcast. Like, that's how I'm dealing with it. I'm talking about it. I'm providing a platform for other people to talk about it, because it's real and it's happening. And the more we talk about it and the more we bring awareness to it, the more hopefully there'll be a change to it. I'm not seeing it in my generation. I hope for my children that it changes in their generation. It's hurtful. It's angry.
Isn't it funny how we've been, I'll say we, but as... Because when, you know, obviously, when you say black people, obviously, then even if I don't live there, I would still feel that pain, even if I've been through things myself. So, and I still feel those thoughts, even if I'm not living in St. Louis, or I'm not living in that area, or wherever it may be. You know, I remember growing up listening to rap music and hip hop and all that, and that's where a lot of my, when I was younger, my knowledge came from, in terms of the different areas, Compton and this area, and you're thinking, gosh, what these people have been through is horrendous. And then what mm-hmm. still, you know, things to do with the police and things like that. So it's, I can kind of, I do understand where you're coming from, and like I say, even if I haven't been through some of those experiences, a lot of those experiences, because
you can empathize.
Yes, but you must have gone through that, because you talk about change, and they always say that change is going to come, and it's rhetoric. It's change is going to come, and you're kind of waiting for it.
It's like just keep fighting. We gonna get it, and you'll be like, when? Like, how many more years do we have to continue to fight? How many more generations do we have to fight? Like, how? Why? If you know, y'all know what the problem is. People, like, it's there. So, you know, like, people be like, oh, I'm oblivious. I didn't see my privilege. I didn't know. I'm like, okay. Well, so now that we do know, what do we do to change? And how, like, right, why do we have to continue to fight when we have, supposedly have people that are now in place to make changeable or equitable laws? Like, so why aren't we pushing those equitable laws? Why aren't we breaking down the system if we know the system is not good? It's not built for everybody. So why aren't we breaking down the system and rebuilding it? Why aren't we putting those things into place?
Yeah. I said this on another podcast the other day, and it was regarding, I can't remember what it was, regarding something to do with that, what was said, but it can be said for other things. So I look at this and I think, how comes we're living in a time which is so, they call it the most forward thinking, the most intelligent time, you know. The medical profession is, and what I'm saying is, if you get an injury, instead of it being stitched up, it could be glued. We're in terms of technology, you know, we're more intelligent in a sense than we ever have. So if we have all this intelligence, and the people who are at the top, or money, or whatever, they've got wealth or whatever, and you've got, if you have got intelligence, any sort of sign of semblance, why is it that the same things are happening? Isn't that strange?
I'm right there with you, and I don't have an answer.
Do you see what I mean? I'm kind of asking. I'm not asking you that. I'm asking you kind of to the world. We are living in this time, and we're living in the most. It's not that, you know. We're not living in World War One. We're not living in World War Two. There's not been, you know.
Right.
We're more intelligent human beings, but yet we're still having to go through these things. And then that was it. That's what I mentioned. We're going through these things, but we're mental health. Our mental health and sickness is more prevalent now than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. Yet we're more intelligent. Mm-hmm. So Let's then go on to the last part of last year, which was, we were talking about racism and the things against black, and the things that are depression and things against black people. Let's talk about the George Floyd incident. How was that in your area and living in America? What was that like? I mean, I know you have your baby and all that, but what did it feel like? What was the tensions like?
So for me, it's re-traumatizing. I haven't even watched the trial, you know, because it's re-traumatizing. You know, the Mike Brown situation, it was right here in my world, like, wow. Real, like, you know, I went out there a couple of times when people were protesting, and I was, you know, hear the helicopters going around and all of the stuff. So when the George Floyd situation happened, you know, and then you it's so draining because you continue to see people that look like you, or who could be your brother or your significant other or your cousins, you know, being killed on TV, and, you know, no justice. So it just it becomes, again, re-traumatizing. Like, you know, like how you get a scratch, and if you pick it, it bleeds again. That's kind of how those images are. And it's just draining. It is.
And how did it feel? How was the tensions like, if we, because of the, if we ignore that, I keep saying ignore the word no, but take away the fact that you don't, ignore the trauma or the images. But what did it feel like to you at the time when, you know, when the protests were happening? And then, because I'm going to connect this, because we often, people often say here, not here, on the other side of the pond, they always say, hear people saying, why the rioting? And why did the riot? Yes, obviously last year was a protest, then it kicked off and other things kicked off, but
they feel unheard, they feel unlistened to. They've been trying to tell you in a nice way for years. No one has answered. So look, forget it. Turn up. That's how they feel. What else do they do? And then people like they turn up their own neighborhood. Honestly, people that live in these neighborhoods don't own nothing in these neighborhoods. So I don't get what y'all mean when y'all say they turn up their own stuff. They don't own that stuff. Look, don't leave me. I'm sorry. But tensions are high because people are angry. People are feeling unheard. They don't know what else to do. Yeah. Like, even if, and that's what the black, in my seeing black people, it's like, if we come to unite, we still get smacked in the face. If we come to you mean, we're going to get smacked in the face. So how do we come to you? Please, if y'all got the answer, y'all heard me, listen, please tell me, how do we supposed to come? Because they'd be like, well, obey, don't fight back, or, you know, just apply or whatever. Like, no, it doesn't matter how you come. It does not matter. That's what it is, it's unheard, it's hurt, it's anger, that's what the riots are, and that's what people are, they're feeling unheard, they're feeling angry over years, so you often imagine it,
it's funny, isn't it, how black people have gone through so much, and it's kind of knocked us mentally and then knocked us physically, but we're still able to get up and fight and try and fight the cause.
And I think it's two things around that. One is that black people are very resilient. We are very resilient people. And the other one is some of us have become numb to these things. And we think when you become numb, you think it's just normal, and you just like going through life like this is normal. But that's where the generational curses and trauma comes through, because then you're just in survival mode, you know, you're just like just maintaining. And I think that's a lot of what it is right now with the black community, is that we're numb to what's going on and we're just trying to survive. But you have to step up out of your comfort zone, which I've been doing a lot lately. in the last couple of years in my community work and in myself personally. Because, you know, years ago, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about what I'm talking about with you, because I had a lot of self-esteem issues. And, you know, I felt that I wasn't good enough. I felt like I didn't talk a certain way, so my voice didn't matter. I felt that, and I understand that. So now I'm in a place where I'm working through those issues. And, you know, I know my voice matters, and I don't have to sound like anybody else, but it still matters. And I know other people's voices matters, so I want to provide them that platform to voice their opinions and their concerns, especially about what's going on in their communities. They have a say-so for what they want to have in their home, in their areas, in their communities. And they just gotta, you know, they have the power. We have the power. The people have the power. It's just coming together and utilizing it in giant numbers.
Not giving up.
And not giving up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's talk about your journey then. A little bit about your journey and what you've been through, like you said, and how, you know, where you've kind of come from to where you are at now with your podcast and helping in the community. What's been your journey? And I think what I'm trying to gather is, and what listeners probably want to kind of understand, is what makes you want to help people. So that could probably be a thing from your childhood. You may always wanted to help people, or is this something that you've grown into? So let's talk about your kind of just a snapshot of your journey through as a child and then growing up and then things like that.
So I think in a sense, I mean, my childhood was, it was rough, but I didn't know it was rough until, like, I guess now. Like going through therapy, I didn't know all the things that I've dealt with or had to endure during my childhood has been so traumatizing to me.
Yeah.
Being overweight, I was an overweight child, and I had a stepfather who was really, I would say, mentally abusive in a sense about that.
Yeah.
Of course, my father was a drug addict, and then I was molested by several different people. I think what makes me like so drawn to helping other people is because I think in my childhood, the community was what I saw that helped me, in a sense.
Yeah.
The neighborhood people, like, you know, the lady at the dry cleaners, she was just so nice to me. I remember her a lot. There was a neighbor that we had. I used to take out her trash, and, you know, she was really sweet to me. My friends outside of my family, you know, I had a lot of friends that were, you know, really cool. I felt like they, you know, helped protect me in a sense. And I had a lot of people always speak up for me. So I didn't really have to speak up for myself growing up as a child. So I think that kind of shut down my voice. So I felt like, I guess, my voice wasn't good enough to speak up for myself. Along with being abused, you know, that shuts you down too. So, you know, I was kind of closed off and shut down. But, I didn't get teased by people outside of. I feel like what hurt me most probably was family that was close to home. I left home as a teenager, like right before I graduated high school, and kind of always been on my own, taking care of myself for the most part. Like me and my mom, like I said, my mom is still around. I love her dearly. We have our differences, but, you know, we're working on that. And me becoming a mama is definitely shedding light on that in therapy. I know she did the best she can with what she has. So, you know, I appreciate that. I appreciate her for that. Survived. I was surviving.
Yeah, what I'm saying
that people are doing, I feel like throughout my, you know, teen years and upon maybe my, probably want to say my early 30s, I have just been surviving.
Yeah.
And then kind of the situation with, you know, the Mike Brown, and then becoming a mom and just wanting to see different for, you know, the community and my babies is what pushed me into the spotlight of the Hood Talks podcast and my community work.
So let's talk about the time, you know, when you were abused mentally and physically. How did you ever you said you were shut down, like being probably told not to speak or whatever, because that tends to happen in a lot of those instances. You're told to be quiet, don't ever say nothing to anybody, or don't say
yes.
Did you ever tell anybody? When you told somebody, did they tell you to be quiet or it's not true?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I did. I told family members, and were basically like, you know, don't say that no more. You all right, but you don't want to hear that. So it was basically like, right, shut down. Don't speak of it.
Was this happening from other family members then, or was it?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's happening within the family, other family members, they would actually be saying, don't speak bad.
We just did an episode. I just did an episode around sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, not always, but most likely, majority, I don't want to say majority, but most of the time it's
family members
who are, sexually abusing each other, unfortunately, but not all the time. And that's a hard, another stigma in the Black community. That's another one in the Black community. We tend to like to vilify the victims and then save the pedophiles. Like, I don't understand the sense of that. But and in my case, you know, like, I haven't told everybody, and this is kind of like, I didn't even talk about it on my show.
Yeah.
I've gotten to a lot deeper here on this show. You know, I was just telling my therapist, you know, it's hard because you carry the weight of the feeling of
take your time.
You don't, you take the weight of, you know, how your family will view you, or how you would be, your family would be viewed.
Yeah.
And you don't want to talk about it. But
it's almost like you're bringing, it's almost like they're saying, when they're telling you to be quiet, is you're going to bring shame on this family. And
yeah,
you, it's almost like, okay, wait a minute, I'm the victim here, so who, if I say this, this person's going to be the victim? No, because I'm the victim here. Do you see what I mean? And it's almost like it's a role reversal.
Yeah.
And it's almost like emotional blackmail.
Yeah, and then we're putting it on children.
And they're putting it on children.
We're putting it on children.
I've read.
Here I am, 37-year-old adult, and I'm already still dealing with that emotional trauma in that situation.
And the more you talk about it, and the more you know, you see your therapist and things like that, the more you open up. To be honest with you, what happens is you end up. It's almost like you're carrying this weight. You're carrying this. It sounds frivolous or whatever, but it is. It literally, if you're carrying this weight around you, and then all of a sudden you start to unpack it.
Yes.
And it gets lighter. On lighter.
You feel lighter? Yep.
Lighter and lighter, until there's maybe one moment where you think, this is still a bit heavy. I've got to break it off. And you take it off, and then you're free to walk. And I think that's what you're going through. You're going through, because you've had children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one part of you're now protecting your children.
Yes.
You see, now you're protecting your children because you've been through it. Now, and it's not just that you're protecting them from that, you're protecting them from what you would do as a mother. As a mother,
yes.
you're protective anyway. So then you're protecting them from that. But then also, that's part of it, yeah. That's part of your journey of releasing that.
Yeah, because then too, again, like, if we're not addressing our own traumas, you know, sometimes we're mad at the wrong people.
Yeah.
And so we're taking it out on the wrong people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that to my children. So I have to, you know, unpack, like you said, unpack it all and heal it.
Healing.
Like,
that's,
I have to heal.
That's what it
is. Yes, I have to heal so that I can be better for them in the sense of emotional and mental. And, you know, it's not easy. Healing is not easy.
No, it isn't.
No, it's not. It's hard. And it's not always going to feel good. Like right now, it don't feel good. but it's definitely worth it. It's worth it. And, you know, I also think back, like, when my children are older and, like, my mama probably went through a whole lot of stuff that I don't know what she went through. Because, you know, we don't talk about it. But, you know, one thing I am going to do differently for my children is I'm going to talk about it.
I knew you were going to say that, because I was going to ask the question. Next question was, and I'm going to presume you're going to say yes, because I found that in the West Indian community. So we can say West Indian, but so now obviously it transpires now that it's not just the West Indian, it's the Black community, that we tend to be told not to say this, shut up, don't say this, don't do this, don't speak about this, or whatever happened there stays inside, or whatever.
Yeah, whatever happens in this house stays in this house.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was for a different generation. That was for, you know, that was a different thought and different generation. And now
it was a survival technique for a past generation.
Yes.
Now we're at a different time in space. And our generation does not require that.
No.
We don't need that. We need to speak on. We need to talk about.
Exactly.
We need to address.
Exactly. Exactly.
We need to heal.
Yeah, because if you don't address, you don't heal. And if you don't heal, if you're ever going to be angry and, like you say, upset with the wrong, might get upset with the wrong person. If somebody says something, you think, what did you say? What?
Yeah.
You're always suspicious.
And that's what's going on right now in the communities over here in the United States of America with Black people. Most of us are walking around and they're angry for things that are happening to them and things that they're experiencing. And when we talk about the violence and the crime, that's how it's coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's coming out in that sense. It's like, I want to work, I want to have a great job, but I messed up one time. This is just a scenario. I messed up one time. I done did 10 years, and now I come back out and I can't find nowhere to work.
Yeah.
You won't hire me because I have a felon or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm mad. I'm angry. I'm trying to do better. You're not giving me the opportunity to do better. So what do? I go back to what I know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
I have to survive. Yeah. I need to eat. I probably got kids to take care of.
Yeah.
So.
So
I'm a mom. I'm doing this by myself. I'm working two jobs to just make it by. I'm mad. I'm angry because, right, they're not providing any assistance or helping, like, for real. That's beneficial for me. And when we think about the dynamics of, like, the welfare system or whatever, if that ain't really helping a person, especially if they're doing it by themselves. So then, right, she's angry, she's mad, she has to go and deal with these people at work all day, then she got to come home and deal with her children alone. So, right, she's depressed. So she sits at home and she's not interacting with her children like any other one, normal person would. Because she's surviving. She don't have the resources she needs to survive or thrive.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean when I say, like,
it's
a systematic thing. We're not helping people flourish, and then we're not also helping them heal their traumas. We're vilifying people instead of trying to help them heal and find a better path. We don't have empathy no more.
Yeah.
What you were talking about, we don't have empathy for folks no more.
Yeah,
well, you should know how to do this, or you should do this. You should know. Like, it's just, like, motherhood comes with a guide.
Yeah.
Like, life, living, it just comes with a guide.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And everyone's like, And if it comes with a guy, then if it was ever, all babies would look the same. All lives would look the same. It doesn't. Really, it's not a guy. We go through life with different experiences. So, When did you find out? When did you realize that? When did you pluck up courage then, or whatever it may be, to then go and find a therapist? Did it come to a point where you were, you know, I've had enough of this and I want to think, what brought that to a head? What made you kind of say, you know what, I need to see somebody?
I always attempted to seek therapy. I never stuck to it in my old, like, previous years, like probably like my mid-20s, but I never really stuck with it. I felt like it wasn't beneficial at those moments, but I think what we do as people is when we talk about mental health and therapists, we think that one person is just, that's the right therapist. And it's like, no, it definitely takes time to find someone that works for you.
Yes.
Just like any other type of doctor. And so I finally found also female black therapist who was a great match for me.
Yeah.
She, you know, meaning like she understood what I wanted and where I was trying to go. And she was patient and understanding. And she could relate in some sense because she was a mom.
Yeah.
So when I found her, I had actually, I want to say I was pregnant with Devaya, my first, or it was after the pregnancy, because I want to say it was after the pregnancy, after I had her, because I had a postpartum depression, which is real.
Yeah.
Black women, it's real.
Yeah.
Postpartum depression is real. It happens. So please be aware of those things if you are, I have recently had a baby, check into it with your doctor, or again, if you had a doula. But yeah, I had postpartum depression, so that's when I was really like, okay, I need to find help, and it has to be outside of me. And I didn't want medication, I didn't want to do none of that, so I'm like, let's try this method of therapy and see how it's beneficial. And I've been consistent with it ever since, and I'm highly grateful for her. And like I said, it's been up and down. Like, some days I'm doing absolutely great. I utilize her resources and her suggestions, and then some days it's hard, and but I make it through.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, because that's my next, because every time you say something, I know it's kind of going on to leading on to the next question, because that thing about making it through. I was going to ask you, what things did you, you know, when you know you're growing up and you know you've been abused, both mentally and physically, you know, call names and all sorts of stuff and everything, and then you've been told, you're telling people that this has happened. You're probably even going home telling that you've been bullied, or whatever, you've been bullied, or, you know, these things. I say whatever, I'm not saying that flippantly, I'm saying, you know, all these things might have happened to you, or have happened to you, being, you know, I had someone the other day who's racially abused, and they've had stones thrown at them, and I'm kind of working out, how did you learn to cope with, what did you do to cope with growing up, with knowing that all these things have happened to you, the abuse and things like that, and you've been on your own. How did you learn to, what things did you do to cope, and what was your coping mechanism?
I would say the beginning of the coping was probably just being numb. And not talking about it or not addressing it, but that became toxic, because then I became angry, and then I became, you know, combative. So what got me to the point of getting through and coping was addressing it, talking about it, and unlearning the bad things, like the self-talk, like the negative talk, which I'm still learning, the negative talking, how to deal with anxiety, because I have high anxiety, so dealing with anxiety through things like balance, and grace and meditation, breathing techniques, using those things in my daily life. And then also, I find it's again therapeutic in a sense of being able to express myself and tell my story without shame. So finding spaces or safe spaces which excuse me, which I don't think we have enough of. And especially in the United States of America, for Black folks, we don't have enough of those. So trying to change that narrative and provide those, but safe spaces where we can talk about these things and feel empowered afterwards and not feel beaten up on or belittled. So that's been something. And then, like I said, just finding how to love myself unconditionally. Which is important. Self-love is really important, so we working on that, you know, telling myself that I'm beautiful, telling myself that I matter, affirmations, those are powerful
tools,
things like that.
And you must have, for you to have babies, you must have had to learn to grow. Anyway, one of those two things. To trust men.
Yes.
How did...
Still learning.
Yeah, but I mean, that initial thing of, you must have, gone through your life not trusting people or... I had a podcast where a woman had been abused, and she went through different things. She spoke about going through not dealing with it in different ways. So one was when she got older, started taking drugs. Then it was drink. Then she was, I think she was stripping, or being a stripper, or something like that, and she was basically saying that those things are tools at the time, because she's going through things mentally, to kind of numb the pain. Now you're going through the numb the pain, so how did you what I know you're still saying, oh yeah, now you're still going through trust things, but how did you grow to kind of trust somebody, whether it's a man or woman or whoever?
So in my sense, I think mine was kind of different. I think I turned to men for more of validation. Before, after, when being abused and things like that, I turned to them for validation. So now it's like learning to trust self more. Learning to trust that, I have the best, I know the best for myself. And I know the best for me. And again, loving myself. That's kind of how it was for me, in a sense. And then the trusting part, it's still a work in process. Especially when you've been hurt so many times, you become like real cautious about anything. But it is definitely something that I'm working on. Because even with my babies, putting them in different environments, I get nervous and I get anxiety over them not being around me being in other people's hands. I'm working on that because, moms need breaks and things like that, But we do. But it's hard. I'm still working on that. I'm better than what I was when I had first had the Veya. Again, the therapy sessions, the trust in myself. And then just if I have a trigger, if I feel something is not right, I'm okay with that. That feeling is valid. I don't have to stay in that space. I can, acknowledge that I'm not feeling it, and I can be like, hey, okay, not today, or, I'm not, maybe let's try it some other time. So just, validating myself and knowing, I can feel how I want to feel, and I notice it, I address it, but I don't have to stay there.
And you sound it's funny because now, after all the shushing and don't say that and all that, it's you've got a powerful voice. You've got a voice of reason and strength there. You're building up a lot of strength. I can hear it. I can feel it. No matter the anxiety and vulnerability, we're all vulnerable. But I can feel that you've got there's something wanting to get out, and because I can hear by you protective, there's a protective nature there as well, not just of you, your babies, but obviously the community. You want your voice to be heard, but then you want others. You want to hear other voices, and everybody to kind of come together to kind of do this big voice, so everybody can hear that we are.
Yep.
This has gone. This is what's happened. This is what we've gone through. This is what we need to deal with. How do we address this? So let's talk about, for the last part of this, because I'm going to have you back on the show, because I think I like to talk about things like the postpartum and different areas. That could be a thing, because that'd be brilliant, because to hear for women out there, yeah, you said it is real. Let's talk about what you do for the community, what's happening in the community, and why you do it.
So I recently launched a podcast. I did it December of last year. It's called the Hood Talks Podcast. We're on major platforms like Spotify. I do live shows on Facebook. You can find our previous shows on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, so please go subscribe there. And so what is it is, excuse me, I call it a community podcast because I am trying to, like you said, uplift and highlight and elevate and support community voices. I like to have all stakeholders, including and most importantly, the people who are in the community going through those different types of things, experiences, on the platform to talk about it. So we really are geared to the urban community, and we talk about different broad topics, all type of different topics around what's affecting the urban communities or Black people, period. Meaning like we had a show about fighting equity and the man's role in it, because you know right now a lot of Black women in the U.S. United States of America are doing some game changing things, like Stacey Abrams in Georgia for the campaign. St. Louis just elected his first Black female mayor of the city of St. Louis, so that's major. A lot of Black women are doing some things in the community, but so we did a show around that. We did a show about the school system and how it's failing Black children. I just did one again about the sexual abuse. We have one coming up on the 24th of April that's called Fighting Racism Authentically, My Experience as an Ally. It'll be an all-white panel discussing racism and anti-racism work and their own experiences around it. I'm actually recording one about financial literacy in a couple hours that will be out there. So I just wanted to bring community on a platform to talk about these important topics, discussions, and things like that, and elevate their voices. I feel like a lot of times people are put in places, when we talk about elected officials, they're put in these places and making these decisions for people, and they don't even have any type of relationship with the community. And they're not really even getting the their advice or the suggestions from what the community wants. They're just going and making these decisions. So I think community voice should be first when we're talking about making decisions in certain communities. And so I'm doing that in my platform, is elevating those voices and then trying to bridge the gap between the elected officials and the community, and then build up civic engagement and in my community, because I think that's important also, you know, being aware of those positions that these elected officials and leaders hold and what they do, and how it can impact and benefit you, and how, you know, you utilize them, because they work for the people. So how do you utilize them? So that's kind of where my that's what my podcast is kind of built around. And I like I said, I do it because I've seen what storytelling or what how powerful a story can be. And like, and even in this setting, like, this could be impactful to so many people. And so I just want to provide people that space to hear those stories, and not only hear, but I also know how it feels to heal in telling your story. So I want people to be able to heal in the process also. And so that's kind of why I started the podcast and the platform.
And also the podcast actually is a good outlet for you, because then it gives you the opportunity to voice your concerns, both negative and positive, everything, and also gets you the opportunity to hear voices that you might not have ever heard. Like you say, you might not have ever heard, you know, there might be somebody in your community that you've walked past on that day. And you don't know them, but also then you come on your podcast, and so it's a brilliant platform. And I think what you're doing for the community, and not just your just community, for the wider community, because if you think about just your community, if your podcast has been heard over around the world, that means and around even surrounding communities, they will start to look and think, oh well, this is happening in our community. Like you said, people.
Yeah.
These things, you know, I just find things around this world a bit strange, that people will make decisions on a community when they don't even live there or have never lived your life.
Yeah.
I just find that.
Ain't that crazy? But that's power, and people love, some people love power and will do anything for power. But yeah, don't even live there. Power and control, but don't even live there, and you're trying to make an impact on somebody else's community without asking them what they want. Because they live there. They are the ones that's there. So you putting in gas stations and liquor stores, and all they might be asking for is a grocery store.
Yeah.
a good grocery store, or a cafe, or a park where they can walk, or a sidewalk. Simple things. And you're throwing in whatever's going to make you money.
I'd like to say, what would you say to anybody that may be struggling at the moment, where, you know, maybe they've been through the things that you've been through, or going through things at the moment? What would you say to, you know, a couple of lines, what would you say to somebody that may be struggling with talking, or, you know, getting out there? What would you say?
It might sound cliche, but find your voice. Speak. No matter how it comes out, speak your truth. Shout out to Ms. Laura. She is a gem to me in this community work. But she told me, nobody can tell your story like you can. Don't nobody know your story like you know. And so speak your truth. Speak your story. Your voice matters, no matter what. Get involved, find one thing that you feel strongly about in your community. Dive in, get involved in some type of sense, some type of way.
I'd like to say thank you for coming on, and again, you know, I'd like to again, I want to invite you back on, because I think there's more, not just about your life, but I'm talking about just the things, because you bring up so many things. And there's so many things that we could talk about on different episodes. And it'd be nice to have you back on again to talk about. I'm definitely interested, you know, I say interested in all of it, but the one when you brought up the post, because we haven't had that yet, postpartum, and how that feels, and what it's, you know, what can we do about that, you know, the depression and things like that. So that would be a good one to talk about. So yeah, I'd like to thank you for coming on. The Men Are Not.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. This has definitely been interesting.
No, it's been good. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I mean, you've always, you know, you're smiling, you're thinking everything. You know, I really enjoyed it. So thank you for coming on. I know you was a bit nervous.
I was. It's different being on this side. Like, when you're the host, it's easy to sit and ask questions.
So I hope I didn't ask any sort of, you know, too intrusive questions. What I'm trying to do is I want people to have a voice, and people to hear what others have gone through, and then maybe it will help change and save a life.
Yes, I think your platform is really dope. What I've seen and what I listen to, and I love how you do that. Like, you let people tell their stories in the sense of how, you know, how they want, and I appreciate that. And I'm pretty sure your listeners appreciate it. And I am more than happy to come on again and talk about postpartum depression, because I think it's very important and we have to again address it. So
thank you. And that was Men Are Nuts. Speak to you soon.